Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse MCLA Podcast. For the 2013 season, I am Terry Foy, joined again by David Franklin. David, it's been a long off season. We're actually a pretty decent way into some of these teams' MCLA seasons so far, and it's a pleasure to have you back again for a new spring.
Thank you very much, Terry. You're absolutely right. The season already started off with a bang, especially the teams out west and in the southeastern states. A lot of upsets, a lot of excitement, a lot to talk about.
And I would be remiss to say that this isn't coming in conjunction with a revitalization of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast Network. I don't know if our MCLA fans are aware, but you know, back in the day, we used to be pretty hot and heavy with the podcast, coming out with a new show pretty much every day in probably 2010, 2011 range. We had some technical issues and essentially kind of lost our place on iTunes, and we've rectified that and come back with a renewed spirit to try to bring you all of the audio delights that you demand. And the MCLA Podcast is obviously a significant portion of that. And David, we're going to be able to rely on you all season long between now and the MCLA tournament. So MCLA fans, buckle in, because we're back at it.
I'm as excited as you are. I'm already smelling the fresh air and the freshly cut grass in Greenville, getting excited, talking to coaches. It's really going to be a fantastic year of MCLA lacrosse.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, your point is not off the mark. It already feels like spring. And on that note, let's dive in. You know, obviously, as you mentioned, there's a fair amount to get to. But let's open up just kind of talking about, some of the things. One of the things that, you know, I would imagine is a difficult thing to really kind of appreciate the reality of is that a lot of lacrosse fans, and particularly a lot of Inside Lacrosse MCLA fans, look at the ranks through a little bit of a lens of a feeder system and wondering, what is the future of lacrosse hold? You know, obviously part of the MCLA's mission is to provide club lacrosse for schools that don't have varsity lacrosse, and, you know, a very small part of that is the way in which those schools end up matriculating into the MCLA. Michigan, getting under its first season under its belt in 2012, came back in the 2013 season, and just this past week was on ESPNU at Homewood Field, taking on Johns Hopkins. I was covering the game, and it's certainly a little bit of a landmark moment for the MCLA. David, what were your thoughts on just kind of how that all came together?
Terry, I thought it was an amazing broadcast, first and foremost. I think that ESPNU always really does a great job production-wise, getting the audio and visual effects down and really making lacrosse exciting for the viewer. But, you know, more importantly, when you think about the story tradition that kind of – or the new tradition that's kind of coming out of Michigan being in Division I lacrosse, going up against Hopkins at Homewood Field, really just a monumental moment for lacrosse, as Coach Paul said in the pregame interview. I thought that the announcers – Eamon McEnany, Quinn Kesnick, and Paul Carcaterra, as always, did an incredible job telling the story of the game, and for that matter, telling the story of Michigan's MCLA matriculation into Division I. I think they hit the nail right on the head, touching on things like why they didn't wait to make the jump, why they took some of their club athletes in from the fundraising efforts. Although it was a bit one-sided and we really saw Hopkins win that one handily, I thought it was really exciting to see the Wings flying around on Homewood Field, and really great to see Quince showing his enthusiasm for the MCLA, analyzing which programs might be making the jump next. Minnesota, with the development of the Big Ten, has been documented, of course, with Rich Limpert's program out there in the Twin Cities, might be the next one. USC out in California, having recently added a girls' program, certainly in contention. You really can't forget about all the current MCLA schools that once actually had varsity lacrosse. Boston College and Michigan State, especially motivated, considering that Michigan and BU have found ways to move into NCAA Division I. New Hampshire also affected by BU making that jump as well. And then Colorado State, Colorado, and BYU, the three powers out in RMLC country. Certainly programs that people are keeping their eye on. Just something to really keep into consideration that Jason Lamb, a BYU alum, very similar to Coach Paul, basically same story, different chapter, tried to do the same things, get the fundraising efforts up and running in BYU to try to make a jump to Division I. The BYU athletic department really wasn't necessarily having it. Jason Lamb is now an operations director for the Notre Dame lacrosse program. They're still doing very well, of course, under Matt Schneck, winning the 2011 national title. Colorado State, a program that is currently seeing a lot of success in basketball, also trying to rebuild their football stadium. And Colorado, really an unbelievable lacrosse community out there in Boulder. Their men's and women's programs on the club level are fantastic. Unfortunately, their football program is paying 3 head coaches right now, so that kind of takes a little bit of a dent out of the athletic department budget. But it's all very, very exciting. The Michigan-Hopkins game just really bringing up a lot of these hot topics and getting a lot of lacrosse fans at every level very excited.
Yeah, you certainly covered a lot there, and I wanted to react to a few of the things. You know, one of the contexts through which I watched that Michigan-Johns Hopkins game, you know, I haven't been pretty close to the story throughout, was the way in which a lot of the club athletes handled themselves. You know, obviously, Hopkins maintained a tremendous possession advantage, primarily through their face-off dominance, and to a degree, that's going to be a product of Mike Poppleton and Drew Kennedy and their wings just being really, really exceptional this year, and I don't think that Michigan's going to be the only team that kind of suffers that fate. But I also thought that there were some club athletes that, you know, guys that weren't recruited from a varsity perspective that ended up showing themselves pretty well and you know, just kind of in preparing. I know, you know, Thomas Paris, a middie that, you know, kind of jumped off the board with his size and athleticism and his, you know, kind of rollback ability and the chemistry that he has with Kyle Jackson, a freshman middie out of Canada, highly touted player. You know, that was a, you know, he was a kind of a Division I player. And then, you know, for me personally, you know, both Paris and David Joseph, a redshirt freshman middie who was recruited to the club roster, you know, both guys from my alma mater, St. Ignatius in Cleveland, Ohio. And, you know, DJ ended up with a goal and an assist. And it was an impressive showing out of a guy who's, you know, only about 5'7", 150 pounds, you know, his ability to be kind of a primary dodger going at premier short stick middies like the Blue Jays have. It was something that I was able to take a lot away from. And then, you know, you mentioned obviously about speculation on BCS programs moving forward and you know who might be the next to make the jump, as it were. And I think that, you know, I'm one of the folks who's kind of, you know, turned his attention a little bit to where is there actually evidence? Where has there been, you know, substantial movement either from alumni or most preferably from the administration? And you mentioned too where I think that there is the most realistic possibility, those being Minnesota and USC, based on the comments made by their athletic directors or other members of the administration. You know, in a lot of ways, you know, it's a story and a exciting topic that gets a lot of attention probably, you know, before there's any, it gets a lot of smoke before there's really any fire. And I would say that comparatively, you know, the fire that we're seeing in the schools that you mentioned probably comes from Minnesota and USC. So those will be the one on the horizon to pay attention to. But moving along, as the MCLA week continues, one of the premier events of the early season now, in its third year, the All-State Sugar Bowl Lacrosse Classic in New Orleans. Jeff Shannon went down. I actually had the good fortune of going last year, but passed the reins of that assignment off to G. Shan, who is a New Orleans lover at heart, having gone to Tulane. And, you know, he took in the showing, but did a nice write-up late last week on the event for InsideLacrosse.com. And, David, you were paying a little bit closer attention to this than I was, but it was interesting to see how they kind of changed the model a little bit and tried to make it a hub for, I mean, you know, lack of a better term, SEC and SEC-targeted MCLA programs and kind of brought in a whole host of teams to compete. What were your thoughts on the Sugar Bowl Lacrosse Classic?
When I think about the Sugar Bowl Lacrosse Classic, I really think about it in parallel with the other big event that happened with the MCLA that week, and that was the Pac-12 shootout. And I think that the Sugar Bowl Classic and the Pac-12 shootout, along with the Nike sponsorship and a bunch of other great things going on with the MCLA, really exemplify how this league really makes strides, not really just to be defined by what it is at the club level, really making strides to be a matriculator into varsity lacrosse, having strong ties with the conferences that don't yet, and really trying to create a great virtual varsity atmosphere. The Sugar Bowl was unbelievable, from what I heard. Having heard from you what you experienced last year with the smaller format, this year not only expanding the field of MCLA teams in the scope of SEC and Big 12 sort of brands that get invited into that fold, along with that of the ACC outside the NCAA, but also including a lot of these high school programs, very similar to the way a lot of these conference championships operate to a certain degree, really trying to revolve the event around the local community right there. New Orleans is obviously a city that a lot of people hold very near and dear to their hearts as of late, you know, still trying to recover from Katrina. Tulane was one of the schools that I was considering transferring to out of Drew, along with Emory. One of my best friends from high school went there, and obviously I didn't have any foresight about Katrina, but just ironically made the decision to go to Emory and save myself some trouble. But really just a fantastic city. I've had the opportunity to visit there and see what it's all about, and to know that there's a thriving lacrosse culture existing at the high school level that the MCLA could help support, really a special thing. And I thought Jeff Shannon did an amazing job covering the event. Obviously great for him to get back to his college roots, being a Tulane alum. And I thought that he did a good job, you know, making some great points, having watched the Auburn Louisiana Lafayette Raging Cajuns game. I know that stood out a lot in his mind. Michael Cusimano, a Auburn attackman, a freshman Auburn attackman out of the Gunston School in Centerville, Maryland, actually had an unbelievable game, 9 goals and 2 assists for 11 points. Jeff Shannon was able to comment along with that of the announcers from the ESPNU game that this is a player, like many in the MCLA, who could be impactful even as a freshman at the high end of D3 or the mid-range level of Division I. But at the end of the day, this guy from Maryland, you know, from a lacrosse hotbed state, obviously had a few options out in front of him and just ultimately felt that Auburn was going to give him the best collegiate experience for what he was looking for. And he found his way into the MCLA. And when people ask me about what the real main difference is as far as talent level between big time Division I lacrosse and that in the MCLA, I think that the announcers from the Michigan Hopkins game, once again, Quinn hitting it the nail right on the head. It's not so much the strong finishing attackmen or the feeders or even the goalies for that matter. You see a lot of really talented players at those positions in the MCLA. It's really the 5-star, well-built long stick middies, close defensemen and midfielders who could carry the ball real well, go end to end. The large frame middies who would normally be sized to play defense in the MCLA, the guys that could really handle a short stick and rip the ball 110 miles per hour. Those are the guys that are going Division I that the MCLA is missing out on, but still very, very high level of lacrosse being played at this level, and certainly being played at the Sugar Bowl as well as the Pac-12 shootout that week.
And let's dive into a little bit of the recap of the general kind of lacrosse scene. And we'll do that by starting with the poll. And, you know, this week's update included a little bit of shakeup. But I think that, you know, there's also just kind of elements of what's happened in the Division I MCLA scene so far. What were your takeaways from the February 26th poll?
You know, there's been a lot of shaking, moving and shaking in the poll. We're into week 5 now since the season started. As of right now, Colorado State, the defending champ, undefeated, haven't faltered yet. Obviously still deserve to be there. Arizona State is a team that I really thought was going to get over the hump and really compete for they always compete for a national championship. They're a Final Four staple. And despite being in the post-Westfall era, Coach Malone really felt good about his team. And it stands to reason coming out of the Pac-12 shootout in their game with San Diego State why they're number two right now. BYU, the 2011 MCLA champs, right there at number 3, having great production out of their player of the year candidate, long stick mini Grayson Dahl. Stanford University, the Cardinal, they made the 2001 MCLA National Championship and actually lost to Colorado State. You know, they were a competitor in the Final Four before that and a little bit thereafter, but really had trouble making it into the tournament as of late. Now they seem to be the Cal Poly of last year, the guy that's really breaking in from the outside, from the bubble, that's really going to make an impact. We can't wait to talk to head coach Drew Virk later in the podcast. Number 5, the Colorado Buffaloes, 2-0 so far with a win over Colorado State Mesa, a Division II program out there in Colorado. They are on a long, long road trip right now, taking a coach bus from Boulder, Colorado to Boise, Idaho, where they will meet the Boise State Broncos as well as the Oregon Ducks on the blue turf this weekend. Michigan State coming in at number 6, have not played a game yet, unfortunately, in their official MCLA schedule, dealing with some weather issues. They had a scrimmage against Wittenberg at the Division III level. They were supposed to open against Grand Valley State. That game has since been postponed, and it looks like Michigan State now will now actually have to open against Minnesota Duluth, a very formidable opponent out of UMLC country. University of California, Santa Barbara, Gauchos, team that lost to Stanford early in the season, really put Stanford on the map, but people were concerned that they would fall off. UCSB bounces right back with 3 wins since, and with that, firmly hold their spot at number 7. The Oregon Ducks are under the new tutelage of Phil Keebler, a young guy, a 2010 graduate of Sonoma State, taking over that program. They are 4-1 right now. Their only blemish is being doubled up by Stanford 14-7 in the Pac-12 shootout. And really, those top 8 spots are the teams to watch to me. I think that you'll see the championship game coming out, the two teams coming out of that field of 8, and really excited to see Stanford really break in at this level.
And David, just one kind of quick follow-up on the pool. One thing that, you know, stands out to me so far is Texas coming in tied for 14th in the poll at 6-0. What does that say about their strength of schedule and the way in which voters are kind of, you know, looking at the Longhorns so far?
Unfortunately, Terry, the Lone Star Lacrosse Alliance is really not getting a lot of great press in regards to how all their teams kind of conduct their out-of-conference schedules, because the fact of the matter is the conference within itself is a little bit on the weaker end. It seems as though that Texas and Texas State are the real perennial powers. Texas A&M, of course, is coached by MCLA president Tony Scazzaro. They've since fallen off in a big way, only going 1-6. You know, you look at Texas's schedule, to this point, other than Florida State, there really isn't a quality win on there. You know, they played all of their games in conference outside of FSU. The 14-3 win over the Noles was very impressive. I thought they deserved a bit of a hike in the polls with that, but you know, the rest of their schedule seems to be a little bit weak to some people. So Texas will really have to earn their iron with out of conference games such as Boston College, Santa Barbara, and Sonoma State going forward.
And picking up on the D2 side of things, looking at the rankings, some familiar names at the top of the list, starting with the St. Thomas Tommies. What are your thoughts on how the D2 shaped up?
St. Thomas, 2009, 2010, 2012 national champs, starting off the season with a lot of power right there at number one. Grand Valley State, similar to Michigan State, dealing with some weather issues. Now they actually have to open their season in Florida. That might benefit them, considering how difficult of a first game opponent the Spartans could have been for them. Davenport learned a lesson from that last year, losing to them in overtime. Westminster, spending their last year in MCLA Division II, off to a pretty strong start, outside of a very close loss to St. Thomas. St. John's, Derek Dane and company. This is a team that really wants to do well this year, really wants to break into that national championship picture after having an early exit to Dayton in the second round of the MCLA tournament. They're 4-0. They did a great job of getting some games in, fighting against the weather elements out there in the Midwest. Dayton, Charlie Mark and company, also a team that very frequently makes it into the MCLA Final Four. Unfortunately, it has a very weak schedule this year, apparently dealing with budget issues, having committed to a trip out to Briarcliff in Long Island for one single game. North Dakota State coming in at number six. Minnesota State and Minnesota are on the weekend docket for the Bison. At number seven, you have Sean Michael Pagano's Briarcliff Bulldogs. I just had an opportunity to go to their annual awards dinner. It was a really great event, seeing great things coming out of that program in Long Island out of a commuter campus. The Concordia Eagles, really the breakout team in MCLA Division II last year, making their first MCLA tournament out of the SLC. Josh Fagan was a player that we had to look out for, a Canadian finisher on the attack, currently third on the team in scoring with 9 points. So if he's third, two guys ahead of them, a very potent offensive team. And coming in at nine is the Coast Guard Academy Bears, a team that very much wants to dethrone Briarcliff from the top of the Pioneer rankings at the Division Two in MCLA Division II. Two huge wins over Kennesaw State and SCAD to start off this.
And obviously with that update, it's time to get into the first edition for this season of Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame.
Definitely my favorite segment of the podcast, getting right into it. Of course, our Division I coach, really not necessarily of the week, this one, this season, this is our first podcast, but the Division I coach receiving Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame. We will have the podcast, our interview guest. It is Drew Virk, the seventh-year man from Stanford, a Maryland alum who spent 4 to 5 years playing in both professional leagues in the MLL and the NLL with the San Francisco Dragons and the San Jose Stealth. The Division I player receiving Franklin's 15 Minutes of Fame, a guy who I identified very early as a Player of the Year candidate, Luke Donovan out of Florida State. Terry, this young man has played 8 games so far. He's scored 35 points. He had 6 goals over the University of Southern Florida. He went 4-2 for another 6-point performance against Central Florida. Terry, this is a player that a lot of people had their eyes on. I had the opportunity to both play and room with Florida State defenseman and long stick midi Jason Center this summer. He tells me that Luke Donovan reminds him a lot of Max Wiesenberg from our Israel team, who, of course, is a Bryan product who recently got signed by the Rochester Rattlers. So when you want to think about what a Division I go-to offensive caliber midi would be like at the MCLA level, you're seeing it right now in Luke Donovan's senior year, having amassed 35 points in 8 games. As we move on to Division 2, Terry, this is a special one for you. Andrew Stimmel, the Grove City head coach, has the Wolverines off to an amazing 3-0 start with big wins also out of SELC country in Kennesaw, Tennessee Wesleyan, and Georgia Southern. Terry, I need to hear your thoughts on this. Andrew Stimmel is a 2011 graduate of Ohio State University, another great varsity program, a young coach getting things done early. But how ironic is it that this is a Buckeye who's now coaching a team that's nicknamed as the Wolverines? How about that?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a contrast of sorts there. But it's interesting too, you know, being in at Grove City. I was always confused growing up in Ohio because there's a Grove City High School right outside of Columbus that is not the same place or thing as Grove City College. So layers continue to get deeper.
And then moving on to our Division II player, receiving Franklin's 15 minutes of fame, a real special student athlete in Dominic Scalzo out of Palm Beach Atlantic. He is a transfer from Onondaga Community College. We don't often see players recruiting from MCLA programs, recruiting from the top of the NJCAA, but this player from Onondaga has now found a new home in Florida. He has 34 points in 4 games and 11-goal 5-assist performance against Emmanuel, 16 points in 1 game. Absolutely phenomenal. Congratulations to those receiving Franklin's 15 minutes of fame. Drew Virk, the head coach at Stanford. Luke Donovan, a senior middy out of Florida State. Andrew Stimmel, the young head coach from Grove City, the Ohio State Buckeye from 2011. And Dominic Scalzo, the Onondaga Community College transfer, currently playing for the Palm Beach Atlantic Sailfish.
Well, let's go ahead and bring in Coach Virk. We'll talk some Stanford Cardinal lacrosse, and then we'll dive back in with the previews and predictions when we're done. And now we're going to go ahead and bring in Stanford Cardinal head coach Drew Virk, whose team was ranked number 4 in the latest Nike IL MCLA coaches poll. Coach Virk, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Terry and Dave. I appreciate it.
So I guess just kind of to lay the groundwork a little bit, what was it that brought you to the Cardinal program, and why did you take the opportunity to be the head coach out there?
I was working in San Francisco after I graduated from college, and I definitely wanted to be involved in lacrosse in the Bay Area here in California, and I started out at the high school level, excuse me, and after a couple seasons, the opportunity presented itself to me, and I was asked by a couple people to help with the program. And by the end of my first season, I kind of stepped into the head coaching role, and I've been with the team ever since.
Coach Virk, you have a very interesting dynamic out there in Stanford. You coach at a big time BCS Pac-12 school with extremely high academic standards. When it comes to building your program, you've been there for 7 years now. When it comes to recruiting and the sort of student athletes that you recruit and the regions that you recruit them from, who is it that you're really competing against? Are you going head-to-head straight with the Ivy League guys that are considering playing at the next level in Division I or not doing it at all? Is it Division III guys looking at NESCAC schools? Do you recruit against any of your current competitors regionally there in the MCLA? Who is it that you're going toe-to-toe with when trying to pick out your group of student athletes?
Oh, I think the competition is with every school out there. It's not really between the MCLA or NESCAC or Ivy or any of the different schools. It's mostly just if a student athlete gets in, they're looking at their options, and then our recruiting kind of kicks in and sort of explaining to a student that's gotten in what their experiences would be like at Stanford as opposed to another school. And we just try and paint a picture. And a lot of these kids, I'm not trying to sway them one way or another. It's more of just giving them the best idea of what their experience would be like, because it's a tough decision. And there are a lot more players getting through admissions here at Stanford just with the boom of lacrosse and a lot of kids applying to Stanford. And it's tough because, we've got so many people applying, and I don't envy the admissions department at all, either, accepting or turning away different players that, that could easily be a part of the campus here. And, that's really it. It's just talking to students after they get in, basically, and explaining them what it would be like to play here.
It's an interesting dynamic for sure, and obviously, you know, it yields a changing roster as you try to build the program. And you've been there for 7 years, and now, you know, getting the Cardinal to this point where you're a top five team. What have you seen to be the biggest change, you know, since you've taken over the reins as coach?
That's a good question. There have been several changes. I think the number one is just the attitude within the program. When I first took over in 2006, a senior class, their freshman year, they had won one game and lost 15, I believe, something like that. And I remember speaking to them when I first came in, and I was, you know, talking to them about their expectations and their, you know, what they wanted and what the, you know, why they were playing lacrosse, when they've got such a, you know, a heavy course load. And, they just, the attitude went from, oh, we're just out here having a good time, you know, win or lose. We're just, you know, getting exercise and having fun with the team. Where since then we've developed, and, you know, the players have committed much more of their time, and, you know, they're focused on practicing to win games, and they're practicing, which is good. So, you know, we're out there, you know, just trying to compete with everyone, and we're putting in the time so that we can be successful. And another thing I think that's improved over the years is consistency. I've got a great, coaching staff, and for the first few years of the program, just building the budget and trying to, you know, get things going on the financial side of things, I wasn't able to keep a lot of these coaches around because, you know, they're trying to make a living and they were working other jobs, and I wasn't able to pay them in a full-time position. So it would be, there was just a lot of turnover. And in the last few years, we've had some coaches that have stepped in, and, you know, one of them is an amazing volunteer coach, Dave Bala, who, he runs our defense, and he just adds a tremendous amount of value and insight and consistency with the team. And we've got another Princeton graduate, Andy Kittler, who works in the area, and he comes out and he works with the offense, and he's teaching the guys form, and you know, they bring a lot of different insight, and we try and harp on the same things and drill the same things and focus on the same thing. So just the combination of the attitude and the work ethic and the consistency, the guys know what to expect, and they're just, you know, they're doing things the way that we've kind of showed them and the way that they've decided to be successful. You know, they're using their strengths, and we're, you know, they're using their strengths to just work hard and make it the best of this program. So it's attitude and consistency, I believe.
Coach Virk, obviously getting back to the culture that exists at Stanford, an unbelievable academic school with such rich tradition, obviously a lot of very, very important alumni. If there's a player on your current roster who's really likely to make a name for himself in his adult life, whether it be in the field of big business, politics, technology, entertainment, who is that student athlete and why? Who is really doing something special off the lacrosse field in his academic practice at Stanford?
That's a funny question. You know, when I see the lacrosse IQ out of some of these guys, it's a tough one to call out. But no, they're all very bright, and it's tough. I don't know if one stands out among the rest, but they're all very, you know, they're very motivated, hardworking, ambitious guys. You know, I don't see them a lot. You know, I see them when we travel. I see, you know, I see their books out, and I see what they're working on, and I can kind of get a sense of what their focus is in school. But on the lacrosse field, I don't see that all the time. But just the way that they ask questions and the way that they're, you know, they're giving me feedback as a coach to what they think they can be good at. You know, I like to set it up as a conversation a lot of times, not just me harping on them, because they, you know, I want to see what they're thinking, because they do bring a lot of insight and value to the table. So as far as who's going to be the next star, you know, in business or politics or technology. You know, we've got a lot of guys that are in engineering and physics. And, you know, I think they're all going to be very successful. I think just based on what I've seen, you know, just their drive to succeed is there. So I don't think that it's going to be, one or the other. I think it's just going to be all of them, you know, working hard to sort of cut out their chunk. But yeah, I think they're all going to do well after they graduate.
It'll be interesting to see who appears in the Social Network sequel down the road. Maybe a Stanford lacrosse alum will be a part of it. But getting back to a little bit of your approach to, you know, kind of not only building this program, but also trying to, you know, affect the play on the field. You've got some high-level playing experience, you know, both in college and playing professionally in the NLL. And you know, it's always an interesting question. How do you apply the lessons that you learned in those experiences to a different level of lacrosse, that being obviously right now at Stanford in the MCLA?
Just as I continue to play, the game just continued to speed up. And when you see it at a fast pace, you kind of, you learn to understand where the little details of the game are valuable. You know, just different angles and different, details that are successful, you start to pick up, and you want to try and implement those in your own game. And you're trying to, you know, not do the things that don't work and continue to do the things that work. So, just being able to see the speed, and I think that's probably the number one thing that helped me as a player. And then when I came to the MCLA, you know, it slowed down a little bit. I was able to, you know, the players weren't as explosive. I mean, when I first started, you know, it's the athleticism, the size of these players, the stick skills, everything has improved in the last decade since I started really following the MCLA. But, just being able to take, you know, seeing the speed from where I saw it and sort of apply it to a little bit of a slower speed, I think has been pretty, pretty helpful. Another thing is just, I've always wanted to coach. When I was in college, my summer jobs were coaching. And I used to just watch the coaches that I played for, and I used to incorporate, the things that I liked. And I used to just take the things that I didn't like and, you know, never use them again. So, just playing for a while and getting exposure to a lot of, you know, high level players and getting exposure to a lot of top notch coaches has really helped me, you know, incorporate a lot of the stuff that I've picked up along the road to bring that to Stanford. So I think that's, I think that's basically been my experience.
Coach, in 2009, your conference, the WCLL, actually went through a split and had some of the teams a little bit further south in the region form their own conference in the SLC, the Southwestern Lacrosse Conference. When this happened, the West Coast MCLA community really became divided, and what was left from your conference, by a lot of people's perception, was kind of the weaker half of what once was the original conference, which included the likes of Santa Barbara, UCLA, Arizona, Arizona State, as well as a few others. As it stands right now, Cal Poly really did a great job emerging last year, making it into the title game. You're making a great name for yourself this year. Cal and Sonoma State are obviously teams to look out for. Sonoma State is no stranger to perennial success in the MCLA tournament. And Cal also, similarly to you, had some success in the early goings when the league first started and actually made their way back to their first MCLA tournament in quite a while last year. How do you see the rest of this WCLL season shaking out, and how the competition level is elevated, and how it will affect bids to the MCLA tournament this year?
Oh, it's good. I mean, the WCLL is a very challenging league. You know, just to go back a little bit, well, you know, there were a lot of teams in California and Arizona in our conference, and that split, you know, it just gave us that automatic qualifier into the national tournament. So, you know, it was a very large conference, and it was a lot of games to get to the top of that. So the split, you know, it made us play less playoff games, which is good, and for both the SLC and the WCLL. But at the same time, you know, both conferences have been growing, both levels of competition have been growing, and you know, it's no easy feat to become the champion of the WCLL or the SLC. And as these teams continue in their success, more and more players want to go to those programs. So so both leagues keep just getting better and better, and the competition just keeps getting better. So, I never think, you know, obviously our main path to the national tournament is through our league and the WCLL for that automatic qualifier. But I always schedule a tough schedule with out of conference games and you know, top 20, top 10, top 5 teams, just to gauge our level of competition, so that the, you know, at the end, if we can get an at-large bid, if we don't go through the WCLL, you know, that's always an option. I thought we were pretty close last year, but this year, you know, our goal is definitely still to try and get to the national championship through the WCLL, and if you know, if that doesn't happen, we still have a very strong schedule to fall back on. But you know, teams like Cal Poly, Sonoma have been, you know, they've made it to the national tournament, and they've been you know, prominent schools for a long time, since I was in high school. So mm-hmm. you know, back in the mid late 90s. So it's nice to see different schools coming up and being competitive and pushing for that national tournament bid.
I think it's benefited you guys a great deal in both conferences. And if I do say so myself, I think that the SCLC in the Southeast region of the country really has to take a page out of your playbook. I think that even in the early goings of this season, it's showing that with such a large conference, with such a high talent level, these teams just beat up on each other and really with that kind of shoot themselves in the foot in regards to trying to get as many teams as possible, not only to the MCLA tournament, but competing deep in there. You guys have really done a great job since the split, and congratulations on all your success thus far this season.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm telling the boys that we've worked hard this far, and you know, we're not too concerned about our status at the end of February. We're working hard, and we're gonna keep working and see where we end up when the dust clears at the end of the season.
Well, Drew Virk, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast, and we look forward to talking to you again sometime down the road. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. Appreciate the call.
So, David, that was Drew Virk, coach Stanford Cardinals, doing a lot of great things out there. Kind of impressive to consider, you know, what a team with the academic demands that team has been able to do so far this season.
Very impressive indeed. It's something that I could relate to from my playing career at Emory. Very, very hard to manage the academic, and for that matter, sometimes the social schedules of these student athletes. It's been incredibly clear from day one that Coach Virk and his captain, Jack Farr, whose younger sister Hannah is a dual varsity sport athlete at Stanford, playing both varsity lacrosse and soccer for the Cardinal. Their parents are Stanford alums, really getting deep into the tradition, and I think that the Farr children will make their parents very pleased this spring, especially if Jack is able to achieve success at the MCLA tournament, which is a very special program and very exciting to see them doing well.
And so let's dive in now to the previews and predictions for this weekend, starting with Division One. Got a a West Coast North South type affair to lead things off.
You're absolutely right. We'll start things off with the University of Arizona Lax Cats, Mickey Miles Felton and company, making the trip to the Great North to play Simon Fraser up in Canada. Arizona started off pretty strong in their preseason with a 21-0 win in a scrimmage over Northern Arizona. A strong win, 16-7 as well over UCLA. They faltered against Cal 14-5. And really had a bit of a letdown win, losing 9-8 to Grand Canyon recently. Morale is down in Tucson right now. It's going to be a long trip up to British Columbia, Canada. And I think that the Klansmen, who have started off pretty strong this season, before blemish being a 9-8 loss, I think that you have to watch out for the Klan. Moving on to Auburn, Florida State, down with convincing win, but have since had some letdown losses, most specifically to Boston College and Texas. On the flip side, Auburn is a program that's really emerging out of the SCLC, and with that, I think that I'll take the Tigers. And Arizona State, a rivalry. Indeed, I think there's a great love between Ballard Lee and Chris Malone, but when it comes right down to it, the student athletes on the opposing sidelines do not like each other very much. Arizona State, the number two team in the country right now, favored, and I think they will pick up the win. A very interesting matchup as we move a little bit closer to traditional lacrosse hotbeds. Virginia Tech and Richmond. Virginia Tech, the defending champion out of SCLC. The Richmond Spiders, a very, very interesting dynamic this year. They're kind of in contrast to the way that Michigan went into NCAA Division I with an MCLA roster. The Richmond Spiders are essentially a very young NCAA roster this year competing in the MCLA. These student athletes will play at the Division I level next year and throughout. They will not lose any years of eligibility based on their MCLA careers. But, you know, Dan Chamati is involved in the coaching fold there with the Spiders program. His players are playing great, some very high scores. And, you know, I think that Richmond takes an upset here. I think that we'll see Richmond in the poll. I think that we'll see them in Greenville. And I think that this is where this program really bounces on the map as they make their transition from MCLA Division I. Moving on, we have Boston College, who is making a trip down to Texas. They will be playing SMU, Texas State. And I believe at the end of the weekend, they will also be taking on the Longhorns as well, which they are. SMU, that will be a nice win for Texas State. Mike Rand has been doing an excellent job since taking over that program, coming over as an assistant from Brown, my partner from last year's MCLA tournament. I think Texas State actually picks up the win there, upsets Boston College, and moves up from their current spot at the 25 spot in the poll. And then as the Eagles take on Texas, Andy Garrigan is doing an unbelievable job there in Austin with the crew that Brian Myers left over. And I think that that will unfortunately be another loss for BC as they go 1-2 down the Lone Star State. Clemson, Georgia Tech, a really cool rivalry coming out of the SCLC. These teams actually were supposed to meet last year at the national tournament site in Greenville, but the Celticians were strong enough to make that game happen. Coming into this year, Buff Grubb and Ken Lovick both have very good teams. Georgia Tech seems a little bit more determined. Clemson really wants to make the tournament and play in their home state, in their home city, but I think that Georgia Tech picks up the home win in this one. The University of Pittsburgh made their first MCLA tournament last year, coming out of the CCLA after Michigan, of course, made the jump, making room for them to get an at-large bid. They now compete with Michigan State and Davenport, making the jump from Division II. But Pitt is going down into SCLC country, where they will play Clemson and Auburn in a doubleheader. This happens in MCLA lacrosse. It's happened a few times this season with some of the weather issues that we've been having. It doesn't really happen very often in the NCAA. It's happened once or twice at Division III level and the Division II level in the past few years, but in the MCLA, sometimes you got to play two games in one day. It's going to be tough for Pitt. I see them picking up the win against Clemson, but when they're down to their twos and threes against Auburn, a team that I expect to be riding high off a win over Florida State, I see Auburn continuing the upset theme and taking down the Panthers in that second game. UCSB, Colorado State. Colorado State's the perennial defending champ, and while UCSB has done a great job rebounding from the Stanford loss, I don't see Alex Smith losing to the Gauchos. Colorado, Oregon, taking place on the Boise Blue Turf, of course, a three-way team of teams meeting out there in Boise as Boise State hosts both the Buffaloes and the Ducks. Colorado, Oregon, it's going to be a really good game. Phil Keebler has done a great job of taking over that Oregon program. I'm such a fan of everything that they're doing on the field as well as in their equipment room with their new uniforms. Colorado seems really determined this year. John Galvin and Marty Taffet, the coaching tandem, really wanting to see Colorado expand past their usual one-and-done MCLA tournament appearance in the first round. So I see Colorado picking up that win coming off of their very, very long bus trip to Boise. And then we wrap things up. We talked to Coach Virk about the rising level of competition in the WCLL, and we'll get a preview of that this very weekend when Sonoma State takes on Cal. As of late, Cal has been the hotter team. They made it to the MCLA tournament last year. Sonoma State has Doug Carl back in the head coaching fold. They had a lot of preseason hype, but when it comes right down to it, I think the Bears have the advantage and that they will win that game and really continue to hold on to that number two spot behind Stanford in the WCLL, Terry.
Wow, that's a lot of information coming at you. 12 games, predictions, previews. Dave Franklin running through the division one weekend, and we've got a 6-game slate for you in D2. I'm going to challenge you to get through it in 60 seconds.
60 seconds for Division II, Grove City and Elon. Grove City on a very, very strong start so far. I see them continuing their run and picking picking up the win over the incumbent SCLC champion in Division II. Missouri Baptist goes on a tour of SCLC country, taking on Tennessee Wesleyan and Emory. I see the Spartans winning both of those games. Indiana Tech taking on North Dakota State, very much a bracket buster game for the MCLA tournament. Terry Nichter has a doubleheader taking on St. Thomas as well. I see Indiana Tech beating North Dakota State and getting a very important win for themselves as they try to get to the MCLA tournament for the first time this year. I think that they will unfortunately fall to St. Thomas, who will probably hold on to that number one spot going into the MCLA tournament. And the last game on the Division II docket is the University of Rhode Island Rams taking on Shawn Michael Pagano's Briarcliff Bulldogs. Briarcliff is the home team, ranked number 7 in Division II. Very, very anxious to start playing lacrosse out there on Long Island. Bulldogs, I think, have a 6-goal advantage in that game at least.
Well, David, I'm not holding the stopwatch to the NFL Combine, but I think you got in just under the wire, so I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for all of the information. I want to thank Drew Virk for his appearance on the Maiden MCLA podcast of the 2013 season. Dave, it's going to be a great weekend. It's going to be a great season, and I want to say thanks to you again. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you very much, Terry. Excited for the way this first podcast went down and the many that will come thereafter as we follow an unbelievable 2013 season in MCLA lacrosse.
Inside Lacrosse Podcast.